Okay, we're going to convene a regular session of the San Juan County PhD number one. Today's date is Wednesday, February 27th, and the time is 2 p.m. First order of business is board approval of the of today's agenda as written. May I hear a motion for that?
I'll move.
I'll second it. Any discussion, amendments, changes, suggestions? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Second motion is to approve the consent agenda. May I hear a motion for that?
So moved.
Second.
Thank you. Any discussion?
One discussion, a clarification of the minutes from the January 23rd meeting, which on page 2 at the top paragraph says expenditures for 2018 were 91% below budget.
That's been corrected, I think.
Should be 91% of budget.
Of budget?
This is a Scrivener's error, and I fixed that for the signable.
Okay, thank you.
I like.
Yeah, all for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Passes unanimously, as did the previous motion. Now we have the privilege to entertain the one and only outside report, which is the financial report given by Beth Williams-Geiger for the second half of 2018, semi-annual report. I think I mentioned that. And Beth, the floor is yours.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody, for putting me on first in the agenda. That's considerate, and it's kind of nice to be here at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's not just the financial report. It's also the semi-annual report that we do that covers all our service lines per our subsidy agreement. And as I always do, I'll outline basically the different parts of this, and I'm only going to go over what's really new and different over the last 6 months. This reporting period covers July 1st through December 31st of 2018. And we talk about, in our report, we always report on the number of patients served, what area code they're from, or where the majority of our people are from that come for services at the hospital. What are the healthcare services that we provide in terms of, you know, primary care, et cetera, and the different departments, the visiting specialist who comes to the island to see patients outside of our primary care and emergency department, what constitutes our outpatient surgical services, anything new and different about our diagnostic imaging services, our diagnostic lab services, our professional pharmacy services. Usually give you a little update on what our fabulous Peace Island volunteers are doing, because they're very critical to operations. And then the other reporting area is the number and type of clinical provider. So I usually go over who's in primary care, who's in the emergency department, what's going on in cancer care infusion center. And then we're also asked to report on the nature and results of our quality initiatives. And so I have that department do a PowerPoint of the last 6 months of the most significant things to report on. Same with patient experience indicators. And then the last part is the financial viability of the operation. And I've sent all, these are all embedded in the report if you're looking at them online. If you can't open them up, I always send all the PowerPoints separate to Pam, and I'm sure you guys have copies of all of that. Okay. So for the reporting period from July through December of 2018, you can see an overview of all our patient numbers, the number of patients served in all these categories that we've been documenting and recording since 2014. 2013 was our first year in operation, and we started this in 2014. So you've got a full year now, 2014, 15, 16, 17, and 18. I'm not sure what I'm going to do about 19. I'm probably going to fit it on this next side, but it might even get smaller and smaller as we go. Maybe I'll make it the whole page. Any questions about just the number of patients served?
They're as going we go up. Along?
Pardon?
They're increasing. Per category?
They're increasing.
Yes.
Ever. And, you know, as you can see, some kind of seasonal dips and some things like ED visits and just in general, we have more business during the summer months, and those are usually the usual months, you know, May, end of May, June, July, August, and a little bit of September.
So I have a question specific to a number of mammograms, and I think much later in your report you talk about staffing issues being troublesome, but the numbers have fallen off appreciably from 2015, from 586 to the NESA July-December. July-December of 2018 was 394.
Mm-hmm. Well, mammography, I mean, we have always provided mammography, as you know, in the old medical center. We had the the other kind of mammography. And as patients continue to get this service online, there are a lot of people that get it now or on island. A lot of people get it off island. We have our usuals, and now we're getting people that come from the other islands. And, you know, I don't know why Orcas and Lopez, we've always provided the service, but never, a lot of people don't know we still have it. So it's our usual regulars, and now they're returning. They're getting reminded to return for their mammography. And, you know, this is pretty steady. We have there every Tuesday, and our Tuesdays are usually always full. With the staffing, the mammography tech has flown over here. It's not anybody that's on staff right now. So we don't really have staffing issues with mammography. But you'll see later on that one of the new things that's happening is this year we're going to be getting the new 3D mammo. And that's kind of the new thing over the last year. People have... We've got digital mammo. We've had digital mammo throughout this whole reporting, these years that we've reported. But the new thing now is 3D mammo, and that happened last year, I think the beginning of last year, on the mainland. And so a lot of people maybe left to go do that. Our numbers are still up a little bit more than they have been. But I think that's what you're going to see is maybe once we get the 3D mammo and a lot of more people will know about it, they'll do a big marketing part of that, and it's kind of the new state-of-the-art thing to get 3D mammo now.
Very good. Thanks, Scott.
Okay. So those are the numbers. As you see, they're steadily increasing probably in almost every category. It was asked to have, you know, how many of these patients, what percentage of these patients are served here from our public hospital district, the zip code 98250, and it's about 82%. It's a little bit different depending on the time of year, but it's pretty generally around these percentages. 7% come from the other islands, Orcas, Lopez, and Shaw, and 11% from outside of San Juan County, and I think our last, it's a little different when it's January through June. We have less people visiting than we do during this reporting period. So if that's useful information, I'll continue to report that. Under healthcare services provided, these are the same categories. We provide emergency care, as you know, 24/7, 365 to everyone. Low acuity walk-in care is triaged the same hours, 24/7, 365. That's people can't get into the clinic on weekends. They can come any time of night or day and have walk-in care in the emergency department. It's still an emergency department visit, but it is categorized and triaged at a lower acuity, pretty comparable to more of an in-depth office visit. A lot of times this includes somebody needs an x-ray or some kind of lab test. So people know about this, and the numbers kind of are varied on that front page with what's considered the walk-in. Urgent walk-in care numbers there. They fluctuate, but people pretty much know if they need, that they can't wait till Monday to come to the clinic, go to the ED and be triaged in that regard. We do have the same day appointments available in primary care, and that varies. I mean, on some days we have a huddle board every day in the emergency department to say what status the clinic is in. If it's in green, that means there's over 10 or 11 appointments available first thing in the morning. That's the way it goes. They're held for the first thing at 8 in the morning, and then they're released, and it's basically on a first-come, first-serve. They try to triage people who have kind of sudden onset of things and not just fill it up with just anybody that wants in on that same day. It should be somebody who's ill and needs to be evaluated. And then if there's no availability because somebody's on vacation or we're down a provider in the clinic, then we'll know in the emergency department that morning that the clinic's in a red status, which means there's not really any more available, or by the time we do our huddle board at 9:30, they've already been filled. We might have had six visits by 8 o'clock, but by 9:30 they're gone. So then the emergency department knows we may be getting lower acuity triage calls during the day, especially during flu season, that kind of thing. It's just a heads up for them to know. The rest of these categories are the same. Still level 4 trauma center, still, we still do our behavioral health crisis care with our partners in the community, and that is continued on. Our primary care with our Peace Health Medical Group is same thing, family medicine, internal medicine, 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, and then again, you know, as I say, 10 to 20 patients for same-day urgent care, and as I said, that can vary. We still have Coumadin monitoring, diabetic education, integrated behavioral health, case management, and telepsychiatry consults through our primary care clinic. We work with women's, infants, and children's programs in the community, immunity with the health department. We do our best to keep people immunized as they, and especially kids and families. We address our vulnerable populations, and we continue to do that in our community health needs assessment. The vulnerable populations can be of any age, but we do also have our primary care docs, once they have an established patient, will do a home visit on someone or go over to the village and see patients over there if they really can't get into the clinic or and they need that attention. We have our RN case management for the high-risk chronic disease cases like blood pressure cuffs and blood pressure clinic and that, and we still provide blood pressure cuffs and glucometers and thermometers to those who can't afford them. We have a special grant that covers that. And then one thing that's come up in this reporting period is My Peace Health is our online portal for people to get information about their medical records. They can email their doctor, make appointments, get their lab tests and everything else with a password and a username. And recently that website format changed, and a lot of people got an email at home, and they maybe don't pay attention to their My Peace Health portal very often, maybe haven't been in a year, and they got a web email that said, go to your webs, you know, your My Peace Health, there's a message for you. Well, I had a call from a woman yesterday, and she said, well, I've got these messages, and I don't want to open them because I don't think they're for me. And I said, well, okay, if you've got somebody else's message, that's pretty serious. So we looked into it, and it was because of this format change. She hadn't looked in there in like a year, and they were all her letters, different things about it's your time for a mammo and different things like that. So if anybody mentions to you, gee, I'm getting messages from the Peace Health portal, it's because they did a reformat of the website. And so everybody's asked to just kind of go in there. I've had to help some people that have forgotten their usernames and their passwords to reset those. You can do it online, but sometimes if you get messed up, just come and talk to me and I can help you walk through it with the IT people. And telepsychiatry, integrated behavioral health and primary care, that is ongoing and very robust program. Our patients appreciate it, and our primary care docs rely on it. Nothing's changed about that. We have our visiting specialty care for convenience of the patients, really. We're still working on dermatology. We still haven't got a dermatologist that's willing to come out, and that's, I get a lot of calls about that, but it's just a really tough sell to get a dermatologist to come out here. We had talked about teledermatology, but that relies on our primary care docs to do a lot of the dermatology work, and right now they're at capacity for what they're doing, and they do their usual, if you need something frozen off kind of thing, that's one thing, but if you really need a dermatology consult, they'll have to be off island until we can convince somebody to come out here. We have OBGYN with Dr. Prinz and Dr. Foyce from Anacortes. They continue to come out. Tamari Baz is the Orcas midwife, and she continues to have a monthly schedule. We're visiting cardiologists. They're coming, you know, they're 2 days a month, and their echo tech comes along with. That continues. There's been a request to do some telecardiology, which they do now with Ketchikan, Alaska, and we have the equipment. We can do it here, too. I didn't think there was a need for telecardiology because they were coming out here physically a couple times a month, but there are times during inclement weather, which is what telemedicine's all about, where the cardiologist can't get out here, and it's a brief follow-up appointment. And one of our patients who is on our quality, community member for our quality, mentioned it, and so we've looked into it, and I think we're going to start having the capacity for the cardiologists to call in and do their consults over telemedicine if they can't fly out. Dr. Raish is our oncologist, and there's a report later on about how his care is increasing. Dr. Olson is our ENT private practice that comes out once a month. We still have Dr. Amanda Foch from the University of Washington providing our telepsychiatry every Tuesday. Dr. Ban is going to retire at some point, but he, during this reporting period, and I think for the next couple of months, he'll still be coming out and doing pediatric consultations once a month, usually on a Friday. We have the chaplain services. We've got a different chaplain now, but she's very tuned into what we need out here, and she comes out once a month for 2 days and talks with patients or staff or anybody that needs her. Our outpatient surgical services still remain the same, with the ortho surgical consults are continuing. We have our GI and gastroenterology, oncology, colonoscopy, endoscopy, those things continue on a monthly basis. Dr. Michael Pietro continues to do surgical procedures as he has. One new person that we added during this reporting period is our Peace Health gynecologist, Anna Dowling, and I've included her bio with this. We were pretty excited to get her because she does GYN consults with patients, and for kind of minor outpatient GYN surgeries, we can now do those at Peace Health because Dr. Foist and Prinz work for Island Hospital, and they come out and do OB and GYN, but when they do a consult for someone who needs surgery for GYN, they take that person to Island Hospital to do the surgery. So the patient still has to leave the island to go for some outpatient procedures for GYN at Anacortes if they see one of those two providers. So we wanted to get a Peace Health GYN doc to do consults, and not just for surgical. She does any kind of GYN thing, hormone replacement therapies and those kinds of things. And then patients, if they are determined to need something outpatient, can have that done right here in the hospital. And that's once a month. She will schedule her surgeries to be at the same time that Dr. Pietro's out, general surgeon, so that we have a little backup there. If something should happen, she's got a backup surgeon with her on those days. So she just started in December, I think, probably mid-December, and she's already got a full schedule. So it's something that a lot of people have wanted to have, is on-site GYN consult and outpatient surgeries.
Does she do colposcopy?
Yeah.
Can you give the board a list of the services she offers currently?
Okay. I don't think it says anything in her bio about that, but I'll get that for you. A list of what the procedures are that she can do.
Thank you, Beth.
Beth, I have a question about low acuity and emergency care, and just if there were any numbers that reflected how those were billed to people. I know that's a big concern for people when they go to the ER. And, you know, and it sounds like leaving 10 to 20 spots open a day for urgent care sounds like that's dependent on staffing.
Mm-hmm.
Which, are those generally filling up?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they fill up. But you know, like I said, every day in the emergency department, we get a status of what's available.
Sure.
Usually it's green, but if somebody's out for a conference or somebody's out on vacation, then the clinic can have those appointments, like I say, snatched up early in the morning. And then the ED knows that somebody comes in later on, can't wait for the next day for the clinic visit, that they'll be triaged in the emergency department. The numbers for the people that come into the ED and get low acuity, that's level 1 and 2, mm-hmm. are at this bottom line here. And this is not just when, you know, this is 24/7, 365. So you see that urgent walk-ins?
Uh-huh.
Those are the numbers that are recorded each reporting period. So like during this reporting period, 189 people came in and got triaged at lower acuity, mm-hmm. 1 or 2 level services.
Mm-hmm.
In the emergency department. It could have been any time of the night, it could have been during the day, it could have been weekends, usually it's weekends.
Mm-hmm.
But it could be any time, like I said. With the clinic's not open and they can't get in the clinic, they are triaged, and we've been recording who gets triaged, mm-hmm. at those two lower levels of care.
They still get a facility charge? Get 1 and 2?
Well, they're still emergency departments, yeah. But they turn out to be, even with the facility charge, and the facility charge is greatly reduced, that's how they get down to what would be comparable to, say, an office visit.
A level 5 office visit.
Probably level 4.
Still expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's expensive. But this is what we can offer for walk-in urgent care.
Yeah, we're limited by EMTALA,
yeah.
about how you discriminate on those charges, but still it's a significant amount of money.
Yeah.
And at the CCC meeting last, you talked about the new desk in the ER.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
I can. It's on order. The furniture will be ordered this week. It's not here yet.
Okay.
The furniture is ordered this week, and then the software for tracking the referrals in the community is also going to be approved by our IT department and then purchased to start. So I would say, you know, it's almost March, so I would say we're going to get this going in March. The furniture will be delivered probably in a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, mm-hmm. drop ship there and then set up. And then the referral software will be set up and we'll start working on those now. Right now, I basically handle that function for people that need to have whatever it is, any kind of social work intervention that has to do with their finances, you know, filling out a financial application for charity care or, you know, the uncompensated care piece, or anything they need, if they need a referral for getting on Medicaid, or if they need a referral to the health department for anything. And that's handled usually just kind of on a case-by-case basis by our social work group. And we have a per diem social worker for discharge planning for patients that need that kind of coordination. But once the desk is set up, I think we'll see a lot more activity and resources available on a social work basis for people that come in. So right now, anytime somebody has a question about anything, it's usually handled by me somehow or one of our social work team.
Cool. Thank you.
But that's coming. It's coming.
I know
it's coming a long time. But the good thing about the furniture is we've had the people that furnished the entire hospital make sure that it matched so that we didn't look like we were putting in a, you know, something that didn't match, the same color and all of that.
And that'll be stopped by volunteers during business hours.
It can be.
Yeah.
They'll be trained in the software. We've got volunteers that are interested in this. Mm-hmm. One volunteer that went through our care navigation and coordination certification program through the Whatcom Community College, she went through that and got her 15 credits in that, and she is the board chair for our volunteers mm-hmm. and is very interested in being that person from the volunteers. And then a couple of the volunteers are going to be working with us on the training on the software, basically how to make a referral on the software, how to be there and do intake for what people need and get the resources to them. So it's not a treatment center, it's a resource center. Yeah, for social work.
On page 7J, emergency department practitioners, I didn't see Dr. Hazlett.
Who?
We're not there yet.
Huh?
Yeah, we
haven't gone to page 7 yet.
Oh,
I'll get there. I'll get there.
You are, huh? But, yeah.
Okay, so I'm on diagnostic imaging on page 5, and the news is in FY19, the purchase of the 3D mammo is underway. So that's the big news to the community, and that will be marketed.
When?
So 3D mammo.
When do you know when it's going to be delivered?
No.
Sometime this year.
It's underway. Now, this is what I got from the imaging manager, so I would say pretty soon.
Good.
And this FY19 takes us all the way into June.
Okay.
Can I even ask a question?
Could I say something?
Yes.
I've been having 3D images from Bellingham for 3 years.
Yes, I know.
The copay is $131 for me this month, and it was even more. So I think you're going to start to have people asking about how expensive it is. It is the way to go.
Yeah, I mean,
but
they want the service.
And we have the highest insurance that you can have, so people are going to be asking you about that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, and remember, you know, diagnostic or imaging services at our hospital are more expensive than they are in a freestanding imaging center. So if you get a mammogram here just right now, it's going to be more expensive than if you go to Northwest Radiology on the mainland and get a regular digital mammography or any x-ray. We've been through this and we've talked about this. The cost of imaging and lab are higher in a hospital setting like ours than they are in the mainland. And I tell people if they're concerned, they should shop around. If they have a high deductible, if they have an insurance that doesn't pay or they're paying out of pocket, they should be informed consumers. If you're in the emergency department and you get all these diagnostic tests, that's part of the care. But if you're getting an outpatient surgery, an outpatient ancillary service like lab or x-ray, and it's of concern to you and you have a higher copay, shop around. We can't hit all the bases. We provide what we provide, but it is more expensive. And we've talked about that many times. Diagnostic lab service, one of the good news, the new news on this is that we finally hired a person to cover evenings, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night shifts. You know, theoretically, we don't have the lab covered that people have to are called in when they are needed for lab through the emergency department at all hours of the night. And our staff has been pretty, you know, fatigued with the call for lab. So we finally got this guy to come out from Idaho, and this is about him. He's turned out to be really great. He had a rural hospital experience, young guy, but with his addition to call, it's been music to their ears. He's there on the weekends. The ED staff can rely on him to be there, and the pressure of being on call for the remaining staff has eased quite a bit, and that's been really nice because those guys are work really hard in the lab. You can see in the numbers how those numbers have just increased. The lab serves not only the ED and inpatient, but the clinic and every outside provider in the county that wants to send a patient over for lab draw or for any kind of lab service. So we are busy in that lab. And then pharmacy, they hired a new per diem pharmacy tech to assist with updating with regulatory requirements and a new automated drug system. There's this new Pyxis system that they're going to be rolling out in 2019, which they already have a Pyxis system, which is a machine that automatically dispenses the medications. And Warren probably knows more about it than I do. But anyway, that it's kind of detailed, and they'll be rolling out a new one in June, and they're starting to train everybody for it now. So that's how long it takes to get up to speed with that new Pyxis system. And then just the highlights, I always ask my department managers for their highlights over the last 6 months, and she said that they supported a very highly successful influenza clinic, established an earlier and more frequent drug delivery times to accommodate infusion patients, because our infusion patients are increasing, and then increasing patient access to the opioid addiction treatment medications, which we've also started, not during this reporting period. That'll be your next report, because that's just gotten off the ground. And then our volunteers, I always bring that in there. They provided me a copy of their newsletter, and I'll tell you, if you look through it by the numbers, they are a going concern. They also provided probably over $1,500 worth of what they call angel care assistance, and it's for medically necessary things that come up. I'll get a call from the clinic, and they'll say, Beth, you know, Dr. Gunderson wants this patient to take his medicine, and he won't do it because he can't afford his copay down at the pharmacy. I have authorization from the Angel Fund to spend up to $500 for a medically necessary thing. So right then and there, I can call the pharmacy and say, can I please pay for this and so's donut hole prescription of $300 before, otherwise he won't take it, and the doctor's mandated this, and I get an approval to do that. Or a lot of times it's travel, ferry tickets, a lot of ferry tickets for people to get from point B. We put somebody up in a hotel that needed to be in Bellingham for the night before and couldn't afford the hotel stay. And so there's things like that. The volunteers are wonderful. They're very free with their fundraising, and they do a great job. And the newsletter, if you have a chance to look through it, really gives you by the numbers just how much work they do, how many hats they knit, you know, how many Easter baskets they sell. And by the way, the Easter basket sale's coming up in April, I'm supposed to say. These by the numbers, this is just what they've done since 2013 through 2018. They've sold 600 of those Easter baskets. That's their biggest fundraiser, and they go on sale again Friday, April 12th. So if you need an Easter basket already made up in all kinds of themes, come by our lobby. They go quick. And the volunteers really want to be more involved in, like I say, the social work internet navigation desk, and just being, there's really not a lot for the volunteers to do in the way of wayfinding around the hospital because it's so small, and you know they can't go and read books to the inpatients necessarily because there's only one or two a week maybe, and they're usually pretty ill and don't require that kind of help. That most of our patients have a lot of family support, and volunteers have been trained to be ambassadors to go and sit with people that don't have family, but we rarely have that come up. So we got more volunteers than we have jobs for them. So they spend their time raising money for good causes. And then, okay, so the number and type of clinical providers. So here's our primary care lineup, the same same as there. Dr. Fothergill was the last one to join us back in June of 2018, but we have everybody else there in line. Emergency department. Now, who was missing out of the emergency department?
I think Dr. Haysloop, and is it Schwitz still over there?
Oh, yeah, they're new. Yeah. Haysloop, how do you say it? Haysloop and Switch?
Switch.
They were University of Washington Rural Emergency Medicine residents.
Right.
Last year, or the year, 2 years ago. Almost 3 years ago. And they are used on a per diem basis. They're put in the schedule, the rotating emergency room physician schedule, about once a month, maybe not even once a month, but when, as they're needed in that schedule, they're put in there. But I'll add them. You're right.
Dr. Haysloop is our supervising
physician.
Yeah,
that's right. I'll put a little blurb about that, too.
And it's important that she gets her known then.
And the good thing about them is they know the community after being here a couple of years. They're and they enjoy being here. I think Dr. Haysloop comes from Port Angeles or something, doesn't she? Yeah,
correct.
And Scott comes from Bellingham, I think.
He's
or Seattle, yeah. And so they know our community, they know our staff, that's nice. They're not, you know, totally unknown to anybody in the ED, so that's good. I'll add them next time, I forgot about them. Cancer care and infusion services, the volumes in the clinic have been up, and they even added another chair to handle overflow days. Dr. Raish is added an extra day a month to come to the clinic for that. So we're seeing increased numbers in our oncology center, and that's not good, but it's I'm glad we're there for people. They've added a few things. They said that they've increased their overall by 39% since 2017, which is pretty huge. And one of the things that Shannon Harris said was that there's a patient-run support group on Orcus now, because we get a lot of patients from Orcus that come over for chemo. And there's nothing really over there for them, so they come over here and they create a little family of support. And this started through introductions made in that infusion room, and it's just a great story that patients meet here, and now they're supporting others. And I think that will only grow over time. It's a special group of patients and services there. And then reporting on the nature and quality of the initiatives, I've got the semi-annual quality report. We're changing the guy that's doing this now. His name is Jim Grady. It was used to be Raymond Bellamino, and Raymond has gone on to an infection control position, and now Jim Grady has taken this over. So this website, or this PowerPoint, looks a little different. He talks about the quality management system that's been in place all along. It talks about how this goes on through the oversight with the community governing board and those things. One thing I highlighted under quality measures and performance is that the quality management committee monitors process and outcome measures to maintain safe and high quality care to drive necessary improvements. Peace Island Medical Center has successfully met targets for all the key quality indicators that are listed here. You know, patient safety events, the vaccine of caregivers, the health associated infections that go by these acronyms, CAUTI, CLABI, and C. diff. And those are infections that can happen within the hospital. The catheter-associated urinary tract infections are CAUTI. Central line-associated bloodstream infections are CLABSI. And the other is, you know, a C. diff is a GI infection, and MRSA is also like an infection.
Skin.
Yeah, skin infection.
Oh, skin
and
blood.
These are the things that they monitor constantly. So as you can see, all of those readmissions, mortality, medium time to ED, and that the quality measures, the opportunities, the two opportunities that we could possibly work with and improve on are the influenza screening and vaccination overall, because we still have seen a lot of cases of people who've gotten the flu, they don't want to get a flu shot, you can't really twist their arm, but then they end up in the ED this time of year with flu. So. And then the patient for the medical practice overall, and part of the medical practice is, our inpatient and our clinic times. And there's the PowerPoint on that too. The safety stop is something that we've implemented as one of our clinical excellence initiatives, and that's basically stop the line. If somebody sees something that isn't right or there's a potential to harm any patient, and an example of that is we had a bunch of these syringes that leaked because of a defect, and they were found in the clinic, and they pulled the safety stop because the person was getting an injection, the stuff was leaking out. So they pulled the safety stop so that those syringes were taken out of use in all the systems in all 9 of the hospitals. That was an example. But a safety stop can be anything that might harm a patient or cause a death or a serious injury of any kind. So you are able to, doesn't matter if it's me, one of the nurses, one of the doctors, whoever can call a safety stop. We ended up calling a safety stop during Snowmageddon because we didn't have our sidewalks shoveled all the way, and it was 7:30 in the morning, and you know the snow was up to here, and there were still some people with canes trying to get into the clinic, and we had thought that the parks and or the public works were going to come through with their snow removal, and that didn't happen right quite so timely in the morning. So we ended up calling a safety stop, getting together, what can we do to not, you know, have our staff out there with the shovels, which we had to do anyway. We got volunteers. We ordered a snowblower for next year, and we have it all ready. But that was a safety stop that we, you know, was just for our safety, really, basically, did that. And that's been, that means that as the administrator on call, if someone pulls a safety stop, I have to respond within 90 minutes to the hospital and do a full investigation. Why are we doing this? What happened? What are the measures? What are the countermeasures we're doing to make sure this can't happen further? And then an incident report. It's a full-blown quality initiative that's happening.
And this is opposed to the usual pauses that are built into procedures.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a new thing. It could be for anything, but... And we've only had the one so far that I know of since this was implemented. This was just recently implemented about 2 months ago as an overall hospital system safety initiative. And then regulatory updates, you know, we are regulated by all kinds of accreditation places. Internal reviewers have observed our systems around patient care, infection prevention, quality management, staffing, materials management. Improvement actions were approved and are either on track or completed. We track this consistently, and we are in the window as we speak to our next 3-year accreditation from the DMV, February through May of 2019. We have our staff accreditation person here today just in case they showed up. They usually always show up on a Tuesday. They didn't come this week, but that doesn't mean they won't be here next week. And so we have to perform... make sure that all our initiatives are in order when they come to do their survey for accreditation to continue to see Medicare patients. So patient experience indicators, Jenny Westbury is our patient education manager, and she did this PowerPoint on patient experience indicators for the reporting period. This is kind of hard to read here. You'd have to look at it online or look at it. I printed mine out 2 at a time on a page, but you might have a whole one on there. But these are how we indicate things in all these categories, how they're improving from quarter to quarter. And basically, the emergency department usually does really well on these surveys. July through December 2018, PIMC remains in the 90th percentile for fiscal year 2019, quarter 1 and 2, the scores are trending up even higher from quarter 3 to 4 in most areas. In all of our emergency key service driver sections of care, Peace Health remains above the 95th percentile for the nation, except for family or friends, which is the 93rd percentile. And this means that PIMC scores are above and beyond 93% of the hospitals in the nation on all the key indicators that make up the emergency department care experience. And these totals are based on patient feedback on post-emergency care and visits. You can see these graphs there. They track all this stuff with patient surveys. In our inpatient experience, you know, they always remind us that they only receive 15 inpatient surveys, and they need at least 30 to be able to validate the data as statistically significant. But you can imagine we don't have that many inpatients, you know, per this reporting period, so our N was low. And but overall, people are fairly happy. You get one patient that doesn't understand or wasn't happy, and that kind of screws your results. Our outpatient ambulatory surgery scores are really improving, which is great to see. All areas of that surgery show improvement, and some even show significant improvement. So I think that's due from some organizational things and getting more capacity for our surgeries. In outpatient, we were, you know, behind. We had a waiting list for some GI procedures, and Dr. Pietro added some extra time for general surgery and things, so we're doing better there. And then she kind of cut and paste little, these are actual comments from people in the surveys, just for your information. Any questions so far on this stuff?
Back on pharmacy, national drug shortage issues, so how are we doing on drug shortages?
I don't know about drug shortages. I'd have to check with the pharmacy. Is there something specific?
Well, nationally. Yeah. I mean, we're having trouble getting drugs, you know, emergency departments. Do we have, our relationship with Peace Health? Do we have, are we having problems? Are they having problems?
I haven't heard of any. Now, usually every morning at the huddle board, we'll know if there's, you know, the pharmacist is there, and she'll report out any time we've got a shortage of something. I haven't heard that in a long time, so I don't know what might be of issue. I'm not the pharmacy expert, though. I can find out for you if there's something. But I haven't heard that reported out.
Okay, and one more question. Is it Chris Phillips?
Chris Phillips is the community health.
Yeah. Has his replacement been announced yet?
I don't know. I don't know who his replacement is. Okay. So I don't know yet. It hasn't been announced to me.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, he's going to retire in March, by next month, so. Yeah, usually I hear all that stuff through an email through the system. You know, so-and-so has now been hired, too.
Okay.
And Beth, do any clinicians offer nutritional counseling?
Yeah, we have Kristen Rezebeck as our nutrition, our nutritionist. Right now, she's per diem, so she's hired to come in and do nutrition consults for inpatients, not on outpatients yet. But that could be something that could be set up. Right now, as an inpatient, they have a consult from nutrition, it's part of their inpatient stay, and it's billed out that way. She is not doing an outpatient practice. And if she did, we would have to set her up to bill for that service through the primary care clinic right now. I don't know if that's going on or not. She also is an employee of the health department and does work for them. So she's just per diem for Peace Health right now.
So just a regular primary care physician would not routinely offer that information to a patient?
They could. Not routinely, no. If somebody needed a consult, I mean through the primary care clinic, and they said you should have a nutritionist consult, I've had that come up a couple times. She'd certainly be available. It's something Peace Health Medical Group as a clinic needs to build into as a service line. I don't know if they've done that.
I was thinking more just the primary care physician herself is offering counsel regarding vitamin D3 levels, supplementation, this kind of thing.
Well, I know the primary care docs will talk to patients about their nutrition needs.
Okay.
And we are also, one of the things that we got approved this year, we're working with the health department, is a prescription for healthy food, which is that program that the health department is putting together, and that's going to be part of our help desk here, is that the doctors will, we have $5,000, we got $5,000 donation to the health department's Healthy Bucks food thing for fresh fruit and vegetables available at the grocery store or at the farmer's market. And we want to make it so that if the patient comes into the doctor and the doctor says, you know, you really ought to eat more fruits and vegetables, here's $25 voucher to go to the store and buy fruits and vegetables. And they can only buy fruits and vegetables. We're working that out with them now, but that's going to start from our referral desk and from the primary care desk. And I know the primary care doctors, if somebody has a diabetic concern, we have our diabetic educator, which will counsel people on their diets and nutrition related to their diabetes. So that's available on a regular basis, and that's scheduled right now. The diabetic educator has got office hours, and so patients will get referred to her if they have diabetes. But if they don't have that condition, then just a regular nutrition consult would be something that they'll have to set up. It's doable, definitely doable. And if Kristen Rezbeck has got capacity from her other job from the health department to have a specific once a month, or I don't know how often we'd need it. Probably not every week, but maybe we could schedule her once a month to do referrals from the primary care office for just in general. That's something we could set up. I've heard that lately, so that might be something they're working on.
Also, I noticed that the chaplain is here 2 days a month. And what are those needs being met when the chaplain's not here?
Well, we right now, if the needs are not met here on the island, like if they don't have a minister or something that they would do, we would usually call them in. We can always call somebody to come out if there's a need for something specific. We could fly her out. Right now, she comes twice or 2 days once a month, on a Monday, Tuesday, once a month. Or it's every 2 weeks on a Monday, Tuesday. So we had Andrea Zatikas, which we had for a couple of years, and she retired and went on to something else, and so now we've got a woman named Barbara Hoag who comes out again that same schedule. But if she's not here and we need a chaplain, depending on what we have done, I think, is located local people who would come in and see a patient. If we don't have, they don't have anybody local, then we could arrange to have her flown out if we really needed it.
Do you have a local resource call list then?
There is a list of, Marianne met with a group of faith-based people that, I think you were involved in that too, that knows what their phone numbers are and what they might need. I don't remember what happened there because I wasn't part of that meeting, but I think that's the idea, that we can refer to local or call local people in, and if they're not available, then we could call in someone from Peace Health. Just like about any kind of a specialties. We just got to give them a day to get here kind of thing, or depending on the urgency.
Thank you.
And I know that when she's here every other week for 2 days, somehow she has a list of people that she needs to see, and I don't know if they come, how the referrals get to her necessarily.
Is it every other week or once a month?
It's every other week. It is every 2 weeks. What do I say here?
I heard once a month. She comes out for 2 days.
And she repeated it because you changed it.
Maybe it is monthly. Andrea used to come out every 2 weeks, and now this person might come monthly. I'll have to check and see. I thought it was Monday, Tuesday, every 2 weeks, but lately it's been off because of the weather this last month. I don't think I saw her as often as I was, and then I was gone. But I'll check for sure what it is. I'll get back to you. I'll send you an email with the exact schedule and that question. Okay, and then the last part of this report has to do with the financial viability of our operations and where does this tax subsidy get applied. And as per the subsidy agreement, there are service lines, emergency and family practice, where the uncompensated care or the care that is not covered by Medicare, Medicaid, or commercial insurances, or is just bad debt, someone defaulted on their bill, or they've applied for financial assistance. It's not really called charity care, but financial assistance, whereby they can have 5% to 100% of their bill written off depending on their proven need. They send in their proof of income or lack thereof and their specific situation, and the financial assistance people will adjust their bill accordingly. So of those two service lines, you can see the overall gross revenue from those two service lines. It starts out at the top with the money not yet received from the district. That's what you'd be reporting, or that's what you'd be voting on tonight or today to release, and then how it applies to the financial picture over these 6 months. So there's revenue and total operating revenues, and then the expenses associated with those two service lines, the operating EBITDA margin, and the depreciation, and we've said how the depreciation is going down after 5 years of operation, and then the gain or the loss in those two categories, and then the subtotal of the gain or loss after the subsidy is received and how that affects operations. So in that case, you'll see the loss of $407,304. And then underneath that are the, all the other items in the service lines in the hospital that have to do with Medicare and Medicaid, bad debt, and the financial assistance. So that would be x-rays, labs, other than primary care and emergency department, oncology, all those other service lines that are billed to Medicare and Medicaid and not covered by those two, and then or bad debt or financials. And so the overall loss at the end of this six-month reporting period is at the bottom here. And the conclusion, and this is what the finance people have put together for to look at this this six-month snapshot, is that on healthcare services covered by the subsidy, these charitable services, emergency or uncompensated services, emergency department and physician services, the estimated six-month loss without the subsidy is $5,410,486. With an estimated tax subsidy of the $511,284, the loss is reduced to $4,899,192. Medicare and Medicaid adjustments contribute to the majority of this loss reported. We expect ups and downs of these adjustments, and at times they're favorable to Peace Health, sometimes not. And in fact, the total Peace Health Island services beyond the three noted above provided for the same period resulted in a positive margin of $726,115, or 6.52% with the subsidy. And without the subsidy, it would be a 1.9% margin, or $214,821. And Peace Health, Peace Island continues to maintain a position of financial stability. And that's the main message I want you to take away today. Everyone.
Can you repeat that? No. So is that it, Beth?
Any other questions about operations or numbers or financial viability or?
So tell me about the new CT scanner that you guys are dreaming about for 2022. I know when you first opened here, you had a Toshiba 64 slice before St. Joe's and Bellingham got theirs.
Does it
and
say that?
And now
that
has to be replaced.
Imaging, anything about our new
On the left-hand side.
Like I said, I don't manage the imaging department, but okay. But they have given me a little, they say anything about the CT. Oh, for FY22, start to look for upgrading the CT scanner and digital x-ray to maintain state-of-the-art technology and community. So, fiscal year 22.
Yeah, I cited that.
Okay, that's what we're doing it.
Okay, thanks for the technical explanation.
Right now, I mean, we have had some CT issues. I mean, there have been some times when it's been down, and that's been not so great.
Yeah.
But and they, you know, getting a service tech out here, sometimes they don't get it. That, you know, they got to fly out here, spend the night. They can't just fix it and take off, and they got to make sure that it's good to go for the next day. So we've had our challenges with that over the last year, but I think they're good now. And it's usually like a computer component or something of this thing.
Thank you, Beth. Any other questions, Beth, or comments?
I always appreciate your thorough report. It's amazing. You're very detailed.
Like I said, for years it gets better every time.
Yeah, it was the best, yes.
But you have better numbers to play with, so it's understandable. Right?
Okay.
So we need a motion to award the Peace Health and Peace Island Medical Center for the second half of last year per the subsidy agreement, that is July 1st through December 31st. And as Beth mentioned, that amount is $511,294. And but you forgot the 1 cent. There's a 1 cent on
that. That's my
take.
No.
So moved.
Second.
Very good. Discussion? All in favor, say aye.
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 That's the right amount, right, Pam?
Yes.
Okay.
That's,
she's the one that gave
that's why I'm the 1 cent.
I'm
the.
Okay, motion passes unanimously. Very good.
They'd like to check that.
And thank you so much, Beth.
Okay.
And we put you in early just because we knew you had to run out to attend the class. So
okay.
Go for it. Thank you.
All right. Any other questions, please direct them to me.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.